Hey guys, I want to welcome you to another edition of Halftime Chat. And I've got a special guest tonight, Kathy Sledge from the legendary group, the Sledge Sisters, and which came out, started in like 71. So it's going to be great talking to Kathy, hearing about her career, how she started, and I think she's torn right now, even talking about Pastor Mike, where she performed on Pastor Mike with Nile Rodgers, DJ Cassidy, so and just the revival of the music that they have cherished for such a long time. So be interesting talking to her. So looking forward to talking to her and seeing what we get.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Andy?
Namdi.
Lambie.
Yes, it's me.
I'm trying to fix it so I can see both of us and like
Yeah. Which is fine.
I don't worry, so here I go. I'm kind of bad with this, so let's see. I hope I'm successful. Ah, that's good. Okay.
Okay. Well, I started using it after during the lockdown. I never knew about Zoom. Then during the lockdown, everyone was going on Zoom. And so,
I know it's like a new way of connecting. And
definitely.
you can't hear the soft music in the background at all, can you? Is that okay? I mean, do you hear
Yeah,
anything?
not really. I can't. No, not really.
Okay.
okay.
I've got a fire going and there's music in there, and it's, I'm like, I don't want
Oh.
to disturb their groove.
Oh no, that is fine. I mean, I want to thank you. I mean, so I'm here in the United in England, but
I'm gonna just tilt this
okay.
like that. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, no, I said I'm here out in England. It's just about 10 at night here,
Wow.
but we since the lockdown we've been doing this, and we've got people from all over the world who have been tuning in just to celebrate our artists from 80s, 70s, 90s, and just to be able to talk and just see, just understand how life was as an artist and really reconnect. I think a lot of us are disillusioned with the music that's being put out today. So we're very much geared towards the old music that really made an impact in our lives.
Well, I'm very honored. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's I know, as I said, internationally, I always like to start off to asking where you were sort of born and raised so that people around the world can sort of put a sort of an identity to where you came from.
Well, I'm originally from East Coast Philadelphia.
Okay.
Born and raised in Philadelphia. I live right between New York City and Philadelphia now. And I'm pretty much bicoastal, so I go back and forth to LA a lot, but for most of it, I'm in Pennsylvania and raised in Philadelphia.
Yeah, so for most of us who are not sort of born or raised in America, I think Will Smith and the Fresh Prince kind of put Philadelphia on a map for us internationally. I'm sure, I mean,
Exactly.
that Philly has been popular for a long time, but for international audience, everyone thinks Philadelphia. Oh, Will Smith.
Yep. In fact, I'm from the same area, West Philly.
Oh, West Philly. Oh, we could all say the Fresh Prince rap and stuff.
Yeah, where the Fresh Prince is from.
Yeah. I mean, knowing that you're part of a legendary family of singers, being the youngest, what was your sort of musical inspiration growing up?
I was a 60s and 70s child, all through
Okay.
the 70s. High school and middle school and 60s, of course, I was 3 or 4 years old and that. But I think I could say my biggest influence was the Motown sound, which still
Okay.
to this day, artists from to me are so legendary. I always flatter when people call me a legend. I'm like, well, no, a legend's like Stevie Wonder. Tony Robinson and Diana Ross, and those are the people that I grew up listening to and influenced my music. And of course, dance music, they call it disco and dance, but in the 70s. And then that's when I think our record became global. But we had other hits way before We're Family Project. They
Yeah.
went global. So I would say the influence is really all through the 60s and 70s, Motown and 70s, all kinds of artists. I'm a huge fan of Stevie Wonder's. I think we're living in the day and age of a Mozart and a Beethoven and a Brahms and a Stevie Wonder. Stevie, is to me genius, and
Yeah.
I don't take that for granted.
Yeah. I mean, you said growing up, and I guess it's interesting for us, growing up in those, 60s and into the 70s, we hear stories about the Jackson Five and how they sort of, maybe like the Temptations and the Supremes were more an older generation sort of identified that, and then the Jackson Five kind of became the global sensation. For yourself, you said you were still more the Supremes and Stevie more so than the Jackson Five.
Well, of course, the Jackson 5 too. I just didn't mean to leave them out. They're a cornerstone of all of us growing up. I'm very much was very much the same age as Michael, and so I. And then when the sisters, when we toured, we did get a chance to tour with the brothers
Are you
eventually.
serious?
Yeah, we'll talk about that, but
Okay, yeah.
definitely got a chance to share the stage with Jackson's and Michael and his brothers, and it was a growing. I mean, I think we all are still growing in a growing stage of our lives, no matter what. When we
Yeah.
stop growing, we stop. But at
Yeah.
that period, it was definitely a growing period for me musically, and my artistry. Got a chance to, the huge blessing for me was to be able to protege with a lot of huge stars in that era, like the Spinners or the, work with the Jacksons or, oh my gosh, everybody really in all different kinds and genres of music. And I got a chance to learn firsthand and experience what it was like to evolve as an artist.
I mean, I'm a massive Michael fan, and hearing his story about how being put in a spotlight at a sort of young age sort of took away childhood and he couldn't have the normal life. For yourself, being the youngest of your sisters and having to be, sort of in a group, how much did that impact on your sort of childhood and what you probably might have enjoyed doing?
A huge impact. I mean, there were lots of sacrifices. We couldn't have normalcy, like, after school activities. No, we
Wow.
had to be always in the same town, even when we did go to higher education, university. It always had to be in the same town we lived in. I didn't get a chance to experience the whole HBCU situation or experience or going away the college period, but I did. Course, go to Temple University here in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. We all did. But I think that the sacrifices in the younger days was more not being able to go to be involved with school activities, you did cut out a huge amount of your social life. I feel like now, in retrospect, I married very young, like at 20, and but because I really felt like I had seen the world. I think more than anything, the biggest sacrifice, honestly, is that you do have to have a dual life. I did. I know I always, I reference myself to a real life Hannah Montana, because
Oh,
I don't know if you guys have that.
yeah, the Miley Cyrus, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I was like, wow, it's like somebody saw me. Like, I actually would do these huge superstar concerts overseas at the age of 13 in your country, in England. We had a hit record called Mama Never Told Me. And that record had gone to number one there, or your top 10. And I was 13 years old, and I would
Wow.
travel overseas and I'd do these massive concerts. And then I'd come home and I'd get on the bus and I'd go to school.
Wow.
I never talked about it really. I was your friends, What do you in middle school? Like, what did you do this weekend? I went to the mall. I went to the movies. I went to London. I had a huge concert with my sisters. I just eventually it just came off like I was bragging or lying. get these looks like, yeah, right, you really went to London. And so what I learned early was, I started saying I had to work, and that seemed to work. And I'd go, oh, I had to work. And that
Okay.
was okay. And what it did for me is it gave me a balance that, yes, this is your work and this is your life, and your life comes first. So it gave me an immeasurable balance of how to really navigate this whole show business thing, if you want to call it that, that your life has to come first. And don't ever really get too overboard with the spotlight part of it. It's a part of it. It's concomitant to having a career that you're going to be recognized and you're going to be in the spotlight and blah blah blah. But you gotta when you come down off of that, come
Yeah.
off.
Wow. I mean, was it fun though as a young, because I think most of us would think as kids like, oh, I love to be on TV and I love to do this. But it's a very different thing when you're living in in what I would assume a controlled bubble, having to be people telling you what to do, where to go and stuff. But when you reflect back, was it fun or was it hard? And
I think, I literally grew up on stage. I mean, really. Some people come up to me and they go, oh, I grew up listening to you. And I was like, I was kind of growing up too, while you were growing up, I was growing up. Said that I was singing. But no, I get that a lot. And I remember meeting Madonna once. She said, I grew up listening to you. And I was like, I'm a little bit younger than you. But I laughed and I said, honestly, everybody did. Everybody has. And that's a huge compliment. But I think, yeah, it was hard work, but you have to love it. And that's the advice that I give with anything that we do.
Yeah.
You love what you do. It's not really work, but it is hard work. And my work ethics, I've been told I have very strong work ethics. Growing up, I knew what we had to do and what I had to do in order to be able to perform. First and foremost, it was make sure that all of our curriculum and our grades in school stay at a very good place. And our mother used to tell us, if that starts faltering, if you ever, if you start falling back with your studies, then you can't do this. And we
Wow.
wanted to, whoops, that's my dog right there.
It's fine.
Sorry.
It's fine.
That's Gilly.
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah, we're all used to animals now.
Yeah, that's it's
They're
fine.
a part of it. So it's like
Yeah.
you have to have a dog or a cat or something.
Yeah. Or goldfish or the fish.
Well, this Gilligan, stop. Sorry.
It's fine. I guess the question then becomes,
So it was a lot,
yeah.
it was a huge sacrifice. It's very hard work. To me, sometimes all the work around what we do as artists. But then you get that 45 minutes to sometimes 90 minute show. And in some cases, things like back in the day, we did Top of the Pops.
Top of the puffs, yeah.
All of this preparation and sorry, Gilly. All this preparation and yeah, for like an hour,
Wow.
and we traveled across the pond, everything that you have to do in order to get everything in place to do that. And then you do this performance, you pack up and you go home. And there's so much around the performance. So growing up and doing that, yeah, definitely. I think that there's a huge sacrifice and it is hard work, but you have to love it.
But
Period.
did you love it?
I did. I love it. I still love it. I love the creative part of it now. A lot of people don't know, but I do. I'm sorry, coming out of my shirt here.
Okay.
Not that kind of show, I promise you.
Yeah.
I am at home. Sorry about that, guys. Anyway, I'll just spittle with it while we talk. But I definitely love it. And I have been producing lately myself.
Oh.
I've been producing concerts through festivals. I just did a really great run in England. And I'm definitely pairing with a very strong agency now to do more concerts because I've been producing concerts. Sister Sledge and the band that my sisters formed, we brought so much to the industry. We were the first girl band to ever dance for one. And
Ah.
before us, I think when I said earlier, it was like the Supremes and 3 Degrees, which I love, and all that glamour, Patti LaBelle and LaBelle and the Bluebells, and we were the first girl group to ever do full on choreography.
Wow.
Like, I can't even imagine myself in a gown. I don't think I, yeah, but yeah, like I remember when we would have dance classes for the song "He's the Greatest Dancer." There's a line in there that goes, "Oh, what? Wow, he's the greatest that I've ever seen." And my arm actually was our leg. Like our leg
Have to
would have
go
to
up.
go right past our ear, because
Wow.
we would get professional ballet, and we—that's who we were, though. That's what we wanted. That's how we wanted to perform. And later, I realized after us, it's kind of we opened the barrier for that. Then you had the Spice Girls and the TLCs, and everybody was dancing full on. And I feel like Sister Sledge brought that to the industry. One of the first bands to do that, girl bands. And because of that, now when I produce concerts for festivals, I actually use dancers, if you would think like share, like production, to
Yeah.
show this is to me an experience. Experience is what we brought. I wasn't gowns, but we were spandex. Vibrant colors and full on dance. And sometimes I'll use full screen footage of the original group to show the choreography and the choreographer. I've had him, and that's R&D Creatives right there in your country, an amazing agency, dance agency, Royston. And I would talk to Royce and I go, let's definitely keep it relevant, make it more relevant. But let's definitely make it, significant and pattern it off of what we brought to the industry. But with that said, I do a lot of productions now for concerts, for festivals. And I love it. I love every bit of it.
So when you say production, does it mean that you're producing for other people to perform, or you, is it your show, or what is it
I
that?
have, well, what got me to do my own show to show, because what I did notice is that there's a whole new audience that is embracing our music, and they weren't even born. So I remember talking to my production manager, and I was like, yeah, and my daughter's very creative with me too. We'll talk about that more with Kristen. I said, these kids, they didn't even know, like, they don't really know who we were. They just know they love the music. So let me show them. Let me show and recreate what we brought to this industry. And it's very exciting. I'm a huge fan of Queen, Freddie Mercury. And I remember seeing a documentary, and they were like, no, we open with "We Will Rock You." I'm like, wow, they open their show with "We Will Rock You." That's incredible. So that. With that said, I'm gonna open my production with "Lost in Music." That's massive. You don't expect for one of the strongest songs, but I do it because I feel like, when the lights come up, you see the silhouettes of the four, because that's who we always were, and the choreography, and then the screen of the original. It's very exciting. You can tell this is a passion. I could go on.
What it
But
makes
I have
it.
done other productions, one about Billie Holiday, one with one concert series that I'm now talking to agencies called My Sisters and Me Concert Series, because I realize that we are family. I'm always being called to close concerts with that song, and being the voice and face of that song. I'm like, if that's a song that culminates in the end of a concert, then why don't I invite other sisters in song? So I put my first one together with Niecy Williams and Karen White and Cece Peniston. But it's an amazing concert where we actually do costume changes, and there's, like, if Niecy is singing "Black Butterfly" or "Silly," there's a huge, gorgeous portrait of her behind you, or if Karen White is singing "Superwoman." I mean, and they're all so beautiful. So it's like, let me just be able to lift these artists up the way that we need to be lifted up. Anyway, that's my thing. I could go on and on. But I have been to other concerts. I still am, and other facets of the industry too. Getting into film now. and television or internet.
Yeah. Wow. No, I mean, it's good that you can expand that. I mean, yeah, I just, yeah, Karen, I just spent an hour and a half with Karen a couple of weeks ago, and
Love
we
her.
love the energy and everything. So it's good to see the I mean, just going back a little bit about because when you've just spoken about being 13, 14 and singing and the industry, and I'm like, wow, at that age, I just wanted to, I mean, I would have loved to be on TV, but I would love to have just been playing and being able to do my thing. How much of a difference did it make having older sisters? Oh, it within the group, did it take away pressure from you, or did it make it easier, or?
Well, in the early days, it was always fun. I mean, it's always work. We know that, but
Yeah.
we had fun working. We were sisters, and in fact, the song "We Are Family" really was written about us. I mean, Nile Rodgers, the late Bernard Edwards, the then record company president Jerry Greenberg, was describing us to them. You got to meet these girls; they're family. They flock together like birds of a feather whenever
Wow.
they come up to the label, blah, 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 blah. So Niall and Bernard start writing these notes, and those notes really are a portrait of the lyrics of We're Family. So very, very special to me because it really was written about a description of who we were.
Yeah.
So we were always that close-knit, and we were sisters, we and still are, but we at that age we had gone through so much, and not just in the music part of it, but through life at that young age. I'm actually working on the memoirs now, and talking to
Ah.
them to tell the story behind We Are Family. And of course, we had our, and to this day, there's still some situations that we're sorting, but we've had our challenges. It's extremely challenging being this family under a magnifying glass. Everyone expects you to be like the Waltons and out of the world. But I've had my own challenges. I'm sure like a lot of people know now, surfacing. I was in the later years sued by my sisters for 20 years too, and they said I couldn't say I was of Sister Cedric from. And that all derived from a solo project that I did. And I do like to make it clear I'm actually surfacing with this more and more, and it's cathartic because I guess if you Google Sister Sledge, you'll see faces that you don't know. And
Yeah, the two boys, two guys.
those are my sister's sons, and
Okay.
they are not Sister Sledge. My sister Debbie, and her children, her family, actually. Debbie actually is sitting all the out on all the algorithms of what the band put together for years. And Kim and I, we lost Joan. And I don't, the story is cathartic to tell because I don't like people walking away saying, oh, that's ridiculous. They need to get along. It's not that as much as I think it is a huge challenge being under the public, in the public, and under this magnifying glass. I find myself gravitating more and more to Harry's book, Spare. I mean, I should say, I'm sorry. I should say, sorry.
It's fine, Prince Harry. Yeah,
Prince Harry, but no, Sussex.
yeah.
I should address him the right way.
Yeah.
I gravitated towards him telling his story because when you are. And it really helped me in this catharsis of telling mine. When you are in the public eye and everyone expects you to be this role model kind of thing, it doesn't mean that you don't have very strong family dynamics that may not get along or that overlap or that, you go through these pains. And at the same time, you have to always smile through it for the camera. And I know with me, yeah, I did. I went through a lot. I wasn't allowed to perform here in my own hometown before the Pope, and it was something that I registered to make sure that we could perform for the Pope. But because my sisters had sued me and said I'm not allowed to say I'm of Sister Sledge, they saw too that I didn't. I actually watched it from a nearby pub, and when the song was inducted in the Hall of Fame with the songwriter, when the songwriter was inducted, I was invited by Niall to join. But because my sister's on the name Sister Sledge, I wasn't allowed to perform the song when it was inducted with the songwriter. And those things were painful, you know. And a lot of people go, well, that's really rough because why? And honestly, I've dealt with the jealousies. And you know, people, I don't like it when I hear people say, oh, they need to stop fighting, because it's not, I'm not fighting. I think it's more like, it's like telling Tina Turner she needs to go back with Ike because they work well together. But once you know some of the behind stories, you really feel that it obviously was a huge catharsis for her. With me, I felt like I, for years, always protected a brand. What I realized I was protecting was the abuse, you know. And it's funny because even through the pandemic, you know, I was sitting in Zoom meetings with this one sister, Debbie, and what I'm trying to do is, now that I have the rights to the name, I'm making sure that whenever you find anything that has to do with us sisters, the sisters, that you see the authentic sisters. I always feel like if a 13-year-old had to do a book report on Sister Sledge, you need to see who we really are. There are no new family members that are us. And Kim, my sister, she lives around the corner. She actually knocked on my door like 2 doors before the pandemic, and she voted my rights back. And she said, I think it's terrible, terribly evil what the sisters have done. So I really said, you know what, Kimmy? Let's just get our power back and make sure that we are always, we go down in history as who we are. And so that is where I am now, to bring you up to date. No, I'm not fighting. I think more importantly, I want to make sure that our legacy is really who the real faces are. We had not had access. We were asking Debbie to share the control of all of our social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, our website. And I believe that, and I love my nephews. I'm happy with what they're doing, but I don't feel that it should be with the challenge of, what's that saying? Taking shade under trees that we planted. It's one thing to share it, but it's another thing to have the real artist be frustrated that we're not being portrayed as who we are, and we can't change history. You know, Wikipedia, like all of the social media outlets, every time I have people change it to, I think if you go there, it looks as if Debbie has listed it as if I've died. And, you know, so it talks about how I left. And here's another thing. I never left the group. I did do a solo project, but I was asked to leave. I was given an ultimatum. But I did what I would always come back. We would always have different configurations. And I just like the clarity. I think, funny thing, there's a saying, an honest man does not have to have a good memory. And these are the things, these are the challenges that we have been going through, and who we are. Does it mean that we love each other? No, of course we love each other. Does it mean that we have madness? Yeah, we have madness. And in the end, does it mean that we're family? Yes, we're family in every way. The real blessing with me is, throughout this pandemic, my daughter and I had been pitching a show called Family Room. Right before it started, we were actually pitching a show, mother-daughter talk variety show. And now we've got some really great music. We've got some very strong interest with bigger platforms. But what I loved is, throughout this whole pandemic, instead of, here I was being sued because I sang the song, but then the world started coming into this little room, our family room, and we brought the whole world together, from Dubai to London to LA to New York. We'd all meet up in this room, and we'd love on each other, and we'd laugh together, and we'd sing songs, and we'd share recipes. And it really was what I believe globally what that song is always supposed to be about.
Yeah.
So here I am, like being the voice and face of this and being able to carry that mantle. And it's just interesting because I think, what's that saying? We plan while God laughs. Like, you think you're going to do this. And when the world shut down, I found myself, people reaching for songs like Thinking of You for me to sing it. And I was like, wow, what a relief. Because in the past, I was told by the sisters in certain times, I wasn't allowed to sing the songs that I made hits if I rejoined them. And that was very frustrating. Then you get to a certain place in your life and you go, wait, no one has a ball and chain on your foot. And you have to, I believe, stand firm in who you are and stand firm in the gift that God gives you. And that's where I am. And now I can take a breath.
When I'm
I
listening.
can't smile now about all of it because I know that when one door closes, an even bigger door will open. I've experienced that.
I mean, I'm listening to you now, and what comes to mind is the story of Joseph.
No. Yes. I live the story of Joseph. If you know me, like, okay, I'm not really huge into zodiac signs. My daughter's always telling me, Mom, you're such a Capricorn. I'm a very, I'm earth sign. I'm strong. I am not a victim person. One time she asked me, Mom, I've never seen you cry. And I told her, because it doesn't get you anywhere when you cry. I mean, it doesn't mean I don't cry, but I just work harder. And we have emotions, Capricorns do. But Joseph and the brothers does really hit home with me because, I have had conversations where parallels, I think, but that's where we learn. I don't, I feel like the more that you don't bask in anything negative, the more it comes to you. And I remember my son, who's a Viking. Oh gosh, my son, by the way, is a personal trainer, a little plug here. But he's a beast. And he has a company called Tough Glove Fitness, like Tough Love Fitness. And Philip, if it weren't for my son, especially when I was being sued at the hardest time of my life, he would come over and knock on my door and say, get up, let's go. Come on, get up in the gym, let's go. And still to this day, with the pandemic, he came back home and lived with me every day when I was going through a deposition. A lot of times throughout the pandemic, I was going through a deposition to win the rights back to all of our social media outlets. And what's sad to me is I see my niece who says she's Sister Sledge. It was sad because Kim, who was with the band when my sister Joan passed, was pretty much kicked out of the band. And she was hurt by that. And Kim, I look at my niece Camille, who's in the band, and we actually gave Camille her wedding here at our homes. And I've raised some of Debbie's kids here in my home. And so to see that, it is painful, that part of it. But I also know that, again, I think I said earlier, when one door closes, another one will open. And what's been opening for me is I've been just putting all my passion and energy, or most of it, into what my daughter and I are doing with Family Room. And again, with my son, who I mentioned earlier, I feel like God has built a fortress around me with my own, my daughters, my stylist and produces and co-produces with me. And my son is the most ultimate trainer ever and nutritionist. And I remember once when you mentioned Joseph and brothers earlier, my son also has this side that's like, I'm his mom. So he's like, I got you, mom. And frustrates him sometimes. And then I remember telling him that story. And I said, God blesses you. If I believe this, for those of us that know the story of Joseph, others, if Joseph was sitting around for most of those years when he was in prison or incarcerated, or when he was left in that well hole.
Yeah.
If he was sitting around saying, "I can't wait to get out of here so I can kick my brother's butt,"
Yeah.
then I don't think the blessings would come. They would not have. And
Yeah.
instead, it's like, and yeah, I think that God knows your heart. He knows your motives. I do know that it was cathartic for me being the youngest. You mentioned that earlier too. When you're the youngest, and I'm sure you people in the room who are the youngest in the family, you just always expect, like, your older brother or sister to just know a little more, or, and in some cases, when you compartmentalize with my sisters, yeah, Joni was always the one who knew about fashion. She was like, "You got to wear, this or that, or red lipstick, and that, this is in that." And I miss that in Joni, But yeah, so in some cases, yes, they do know more. But in some cases, you realize that they may not, or you may choose different roads that you see in the outcome might be wiser, and you expect your older siblings to. I'm not saying in my case every time, but I am saying in most cases with most families, sometimes that happens. And when it does, you have to embrace the wisdom that God gives you and
Yeah.
walk
I
can
mean, not
take
that.
another breath now.
Yeah, no. But I was going to say that because now that you and Kim are close, did she ever say what, whether, why they were jealous of you or why they, there must have been something because she might have been like, no, is it, because if we look at Joseph or we even think about how Michael and how it might be like, oh, our younger sister getting the spotlight and feeling resentment, but was that ever a case? Did she just confide in you and says, yeah, you know what, just thinking about it growing up, we just thought you were taking all the limelight and we did all the work and you just show up
You're
and
gonna kick
sing and
your
leave?
butt. Now, Kim is comical. Kimmy, it's funny. I think that sometimes we are, we all make choices. I think in some cases, Kim may have been told some things that weren't true, and she learned that they weren't true. And we, she's come to me and she said, "Kath, I was told this or that, or I didn't know." And Kim is the type of person that I believe she's always had a passion for her spiritualism. And I think with Kim, it was more, "I just want to make this work. I want to make this work." And at the end of the day, I think she did realize that she wasn't told the truth in certain things, but if anything, you get to this place in your life, you really do have to want the best for the people you love. But you have to want it in a healthy way too. I don't like what Debbie's doing, portraying, I think she did a whole campaign that we're all pretty much behind the fact that her daughter and her son, and even when you go to it's a little frustrating because it's when you go to the internet, and I don't go there until we fix it, but it might be faces I don't even know. I think the other woman in the group, I don't even know her middle name. I don't barely know her, and she's Sister Sledge in her mom, so allegedly. So that is not. And sorry, noise. But hey, quiet guys. But I think that it's kind of like you're driving down the highway and you see this big billboard and it's you. No, it's not you. It's somebody else in there, and they're saying it's you with your show. And you're like, oh, So of course that's bizarre to me. But I think what's even more bizarre is sometimes you'll see their faces with our bio of our life underneath it. And that needs to be, it's for most people that know our who we are. People, I get a lot of people that go, "What is this? Like, what is that?" And I think, and it doesn't mean I don't. I feel like if this is Debbie's desire to have a group, and that's wonderful. As I have a desire to have family room with my daughter, Kim, by the way, is writing children's books, and she's writing her story. So yeah, everyone has the right to that, but as long as it doesn't, as long as it's truthful, that's important. So.
I mean, as I said, it's from the outside that, and when we go back to the fact that you guys started at a young age and it became work and the business for even people who are mature who get in is a really tough business in the industry. And it is not uncommon to see families who grew up within the industry have these challenges because you have people speaking in your ear and saying how come you didn't do that. And it is just a different lifestyle that most of us from the outside can never understand or relate to. So there's no way we can ever judge and say, oh, your sisters, you should be able to make up, because it is a very totally different lifestyle that we cannot to imagine, especially starting so young.
It's so true. And you know, it's funny. The best example I can give is a married couple who are no longer married, who are divorced. And most of their friends saying, oh, you guys just really need to get back together because you look good together. You got to get back together. And maybe they just can't get back together that way. They might even, if we're lucky, can be friends, you know. But in some cases, or in some cases, people don't work it out with a marriage, but they're the best of friends. But in any event, you can't, you know, you look at it that way. It does give you a healthy perspective, or a healthier one when it comes to us, you know. Yeah, you can make millions if you guys just got together and sang. But if it's more important to be sisters and go through our conflict as best we can without that huge magnifying glass there, you know. Yeah, and then you might say, well, then why are you doing this podcast, Kathy, if you don't want people to know? I'm just being very real. I think with me, when people do ask me the story more and more, I think sometimes I find myself at this place, and I think we all do. You look in the mirror and you go, this is your story. This is your life. This is who you are. You know, you can sweep it under a rug, or maybe you can, in a cathartic way, yeah, you can. Tell your story. It's okay. You know, it doesn't mean that no one's gonna like you, not like you because you tell your story. But I've had to go through that again, catharsis to get to this place. More and more, when people ask me to do interviews, I'm opening up about it.
I think so. My day job, I'm a therapist, and
Oh,
so,
that's what I'm feeling through the screen.
I'm a real therapist.
You.
So
Are you? Wow.
yeah, I specialize with on teenagers and kids and families mainly. But I think part of the reason I started this was during the lockdown, people were struggling for what to do, and I wanted to have the conversation to inspire people to say, look at our celebrities, they're going through stuff and they all this story. So people to say, yeah, I'm having troubles in my own family, and hearing your stories can be something to say, okay, it's not just my fault, maybe over time and I can see the positive side of that. And it was interesting to hear about the lawsuit that came through during the lockdown, and having your son saying, come on, let's get out, let's just try and take your mind off of that. And I was just wondering how else you were dealing with everything that you had to go through with, especially people close to you actually suing. That's, it's not a, it's very, it, I'm none of us, I've never been sued. I have no idea what that's like, especially by an older sister, an older family member, and how you deal with that. Because it's, mentally, I can't imagine.
I actually have been dealing with it more and more. I've always protected, I think I said earlier, the brand. It's like, oh no, we are family. No one can know this. And what I realized is I was really protecting an abusive situation. And I always say there's this thing, I always feel like you always hear about the lead singers who leave the group, become whatever. But then I've always said, what about the ones who stay? Because the truth is, I've always liked being in a group. You mentioned earlier, people in your ear asking you to do projects. Yeah, I would get that all the time as a kid. I would get my record company president always asking, when are you going to do a solo project? When are you? And I go, you know what? I like being in the group. There's a loyalty there. So if anything hurt me, the most was, the fear that my sisters had that when I did get an offer to do a solo project, I was given an ultimatum. And the offer was from Epic Records, but it started through Jam and Lewis to do a project. And now things come full circle because now we are writing together again, or Jimmy and I are writing. We don't know what we're going to do with these songs, but love what we're doing. Zoe says he wrote these songs for my voice, and that's relative and it's relevant and it's now, and I love that. But back then, when I was in these conversations with different people, when I did go to my sister's, and the first thing I did ask when people would ask me to do a project was, well, can you do one? Can you do one with all of us? Like, if it's my voice you love, then can you just still do the group? And if you need me to sing all the stuff, I will, but it's been such a roller coaster for us. So can you just do the group? I was that person because, but what I've learned is, sometimes I've always said there's a chapter in my memoirs called It Can Happen If You Stay. In some cases, we can stay too long in this. You can stay too long in a marriage. You can stay too long at your workplace. You can stay too long. In my case, I felt like, if it got to the point where this, if there was something special about my voice, I think when my sister sued me and said that I couldn't say I was of or from Sister Sledge, that was hard because it was like saying it was hard to get work. It's like saying I want to get a gig as cool in the gang, but I can't stay in the gang. It's pretty rough, and that was rough. And now that I'm being asked to tell my story more and more, it has been cathartic. But I also, I have now people asking me, like Tina was approached, can you tell your story in a documentary, or people need to know it? And I remember for a while I would say nothing because I felt like no one should know this. And when they did sue me, they sued me for like $200,000. I almost lost my house. They sent this long, list of things I couldn't do. You're not allowed to sing We Are Family unless, or re-record it unless you have our permission. We want a public apology globally to the world. It was some ridiculous demands, and I finally just said, this is abuse. And it was all really because I did a project and I was asked to leave, and then I would come back and do different configurations, and then I would use the brand name as well, as we all did. But I think I'm not think I'm sure that was a threat to them. And so what I have ended up doing now is I finally got the rights to my voting rights again, and now I do own the brand, and it's not to tell anyone else that they may not use it. It was when that happened, it gave me muscle to be able to tell other people that you can't sue me whenever. And they wouldn't sue me if ever they saw that I was working. They would sue you if you hired me. And what I would do is say, oh, wait, I gotta, point the guns towards me, or I'll give you indemnity so that you will make sure that you're not sued. Agents, promoters would be fearful to work because they would threaten to sue them. And, sure, that cost me lots of money to be able to work. And again, before the pandemic happened, when Kim knocked on my door and helped me vote back my power, then now you see me more surfacing as the artist that I am, and I'm able to use my brand as much as anyone else. And then, I do have aspirations to do other projects. I don't know if I will perform as an entity as Sister Sledge, because it brought me, with my sisters, and this is why. Because now when I work, I make sure that the promoter says featuring Kathy. And there's a reason for that. Because, and I'll share this little side thing that Stevie Wonder, for instance, used to be like a mentor to me. He would always call me back if I called. And I remember once I was on the phone with him, and Yes, he said, where are your sisters? And I said, oh, they're out on the road working. And he goes, that's not fair to your fans. And I never looked at it that way because, you know, we always had this agreement that everyone can use the brand. But then when I thought of it that way, that's why I make promoters. I make sure that they, as best I can, say featuring Kathy so that you, as a ticket buyer, you know that I'm going to be there, or you know that, in some most cases, I can say Kathy Sledge, oh, now that I'm allowed to say that, you know. But that way, I feel like I'm being fair with integrity as an artist, that the ticket buyer knows what they're seeing. And I think, you know, I know that that's important. Now that I'm able to do that, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, as I mentioned, it's in the normal times we see we see groups, the lead singer leaves and moves on. It's very different when the lead singer is still part of the family, and then you know, because
Wait.
there's the group and there's the group and there's the family, and that dynamics, and I can't imagine how tough that was on your parents.
Well, you know, we were single parent. My mother is no longer with us now. I'm sure, you know, it was. I think my mother had a different perspective. I think as a mother, she probably always felt like, even if she felt there was a gift that I had in the voice, she saw it in all of her kids, all the daughters. So her role probably is more like, let me protect all of them. And let me make sure that they all share this. But I think in retrospect now, as a mom myself, I feel like if I see that one has something very special, I would just make sure that the others are not fearful of that, that we all have something special about us. You know, but I think in my mom's case, of course it would really, really, you know, hurt her if she knew that I was sued. That was after she passed. But I think more importantly now, and where I am now in life is I've been able to put all this energy into some amazing things that I'm doing now. And I feel like the road that we take and the road that we had walked, I have this coffee mug that says, don't look back, you're not going that way. And it's true. And I share that with all of us in this room. You know, we all, this is just my challenges, but we all have them. And it's what's ahead of us, what lies ahead of us is really what matters and what we learn from it. If you don't look back at all, just learn from it. That's where I am now. And some exciting things in doing, you know, what I did do, especially when I was sued and I wasn't able to really work, I remember sitting in my living room, and I'm kind of like the Martha Stewart in our family. Like, I like to decorate, I like to organize. So I remember sitting in my living room once, and I shared this with everyone in the room. And I felt like I felt God speak to me in the voice. Was say, you know, decorating a room. And I would really do this. Like I have family members that would call me up and go, hey, I don't have a lot of money. Can you fix this room up? And I go, yeah. And I would really be good at it, you know? And I remember sitting in my living room and I remember saying, I felt God's voice say, if you can decorate a room, if you can take an empty room and you have a vision and you can do this, then you can do this with your life. You can do this with a play. You can do this with a production. And so that was the first time that I did my first production, and it was the one about Billie Holiday, The Brighter Side of Day. And I put together this amazing show, because I actually would always do Billie Holiday in our Vegas act, and people would say I'd bring her to life. And I felt, yeah, you know, but I don't want to do her. I want to do her in a way that she'd be proud. We know the heavy story. What would it be like if you could step into this jazz club and there's Billie at her best? And, you know, I have Alicia Keys' horn section called the Chops, the Chops. And they actually become Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five, and there's Billie and there's Louis Jordan and Timpani Five and all these songs from the 40s. And I just propel you into the 40s I took it to my musicians, and we put this production together. And from that now, and here's another thing too. I knew that the jazz houses maybe would not welcome me as a jazz singer because they know me through pop music. But you would welcome a production about Billy. And from that, now I've been told by jazz legend Stanley Clarke, who's a good friend with my husband, that I have one of the strongest jazz voices that he's ever heard of. So now I'm in the studio with him, and writing with been writing. Saida Garrett actually has a hand in writing some of the songs, and you know, from that little story that I'm sharing with you, yeah, one door closed where I wasn't allowed to work as the artist that I built my life to be, but then I learned how to produce, and my first production was Brighter Side of Day. Little plug, but you can go to brightersideofday.com and you can see some of this because I am going to be revisiting it. But from that, then I did the My Sisters and Me concert series where I just felt like inviting other artists, like a VH1 Divas, but more involved with costume changes and scripted. And you know, I would look at artists like Celine Dion, who I love, but I go, wow, you know, artists like that, she can be. I want Karen White, or I want Niecy Williams to feel like she has her residency, you know, in Vegas. Let's lift this artist up who has an amazing voice. Let's just show all these different dimensions of the artist that we are. And that's what my Sisters and Me concert series is. And then from that, I said, you know, when I got the rights to use my own brand again, I said, well, why don't I do a concert for festivals that shows this whole new audience? The Sister Sledge is really all about, like, what we brought. And so that was just a quick little review of my creative life there. But you know, I can laugh about it, I can smile about it. Yeah, was the suing hurtful? Yes. And knowing that you're a therapist really helps.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
Because
glad you, yeah, because talking is key. I mean, we've all went, and that's the thing, especially for men, when we do have setbacks, we don't talk about it. We spew in it. We just, and it builds up, and then we're probably the worst when it comes to dealing with these things. And part of my job as a therapist is to sit back and listen. And when you talk, it's like, okay, it's a problem shared. It's no longer just myself, and it's no longer, because what happens is in our mind will start to take it to the nth degree. We'll go all over the place,
internalizing.
and it needs to come out. Even if you're struggling with anything, once it comes out of your head and is out there, the brain says, okay, I can let it go. And as I said, it can go from left to right, and you could start thinking, was it my fault? What did I do when I was a kid? Did I should have I sang that lead? And it will just bring up all different things that you were beyond your control, and you start can blame yourself, and it was my fault. I did this, or no, they're wrong. And that's where, you know, by talking about it and sharing it, it comes out, and it just, you can let go, and in some cases, let God.
Yes, all cases let go and let God. It's funny, but you're so right. And you end up internalizing this. You know, I remember when we did lose our mother, and again, this is all in my memoirs. We lost our mother. She was at a church play, and she had a massive aneurysm. And she, so I hear, you know, she was in Phoenix, Arizona. She lived in Phoenix, Arizona. She went to this play by herself at the church, but she was trying to make her way to the bathroom. She collapsed, and we, you know, I was when Joni called me, like, to just hear. All I remember is I couldn't hold the phone in my hand. She was telling me certain things start jumping out at me, like her collapsing and the ambulance. And the, I said, I got to get a ticket to Arizona and see, you know, make sure my mom's okay. But I also felt like my mom's going home. And I remember at one point we just sang around her. She was in a coma state, and the doctor said that she could hear us, and we just harmonized to soothe her. And we knew that our prayer was that either she'd be whole here or whole in heaven if she, because I knew that my mother would not end it any other way, and she had shared that with me. But the catharsis of just of healing her, being around her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many stories in my story that pull on your heartstrings, that in every way we're family, you know. And yeah, and that was what we're going through, or at least Kim and I, what we're going through now, and securing that the original sisters are always known for who we are, and there is no other sister sledge. I read articles sometimes with, you know, this group saying that they have a new sister sledge record. I'm like, no, and I feel this way too. We have things pending that eventually our websites will be honoring all the original sisters and the real ones. But just to share that, I mean, I know my stories are, they're my stories. And, you know, people watching, we all have our stories. And I learned that with that, when my mother did go home, as I like to say, I did everything that she wanted done, because she had told me months earlier if anything happens to me. And all my aunts and uncles, sisters, everybody thought I was in shock. They thought, I don't think Kathy really realizes what's going on. I'm a lot like my mom. People would tell you that she was a Capricorn too. But I said to myself, what would my mom do if this were me? You know, she'd just take care of everything. And so I was taking care of everything the way I feel like my mother would have. But then when it was all over, I had this huge knot in my stomach. And I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, I'm going to give you a prescription. I was like, wait, before you do that, I want to go to this wellness center that I always go to, where you can actually just have the right foods that you eat and colonics and all of that to just. And I did go to this place before I wanted medicine. I went to a holistic place. And the colon therapist, I mean, we're all family here, but honestly, the colon therapist had said that our colon, this is why we hurt sometimes, is right next to our heart. So when we internalize, and what's leading me to share all this is when you said earlier, when we hold it in, when we hold it in, that's how we get sick, stressed. And I had found out I was internalizing everything. I was well aware that my mom had fallen home. But that is where I released, and I cried like a baby. I mean, I just, it was a floodgate of tears because I was holding them in. And it's so true when we do this. Again, like on a different scale, some of the things that I have gone through, and again, not a victim thing here, because I don't like the violent victim story.
Even though the
But
music in the background.
yeah, the things that we go through, in my case, what I went through, I feel like it does, it is helpful. You know, it is helpful. And what I am learning is exactly what you said. I get so many people, they go, oh my gosh, yeah, I don't get along with my uncle, or I haven't spoken to my mom in ages, or blah, blah, blah. And I realize, you know what? It doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean that. It means that the dynamics sometimes are dynamics. And, you know, it's, for lack of better words, it's okay. You know, it's okay if sometimes you have to love from a distance, or in some cases, it's hard to do a family business. You know, it's easier just to be sisters or brothers or whoever. And so that's my story, and that's what I share. And I feel like it has become a platform. In a healthy way.
And I guess there's always the pressure that you have a song called We're Family, and there's an
Yeah, they love
expectation.
that.
I've got
Yeah,
my sisters,
it's funny
which
because I say, and I can't be, we were family. We are family. We're family, you know? Yeah, definitely.
and I mean, there's a lot of us who would say, because where I sort of got reacquainted with you is when you appeared with one of my favorite guests, and that was DJ Cassidy
Oh, yeah.
on Pastor Mike.
I
And
saw Cassidy this Christmas, yeah.
Because I've, he's one of my favorite guests, because I just love, I was really
I
loved
love him. Yeah, I
what he
love
did
him.
with it. But then you've seen you and Niall, and a lot of people says couldn't believe that you looked as if you were you'd
It's
transported
like
yourself.
formaldehyde soaks.
I'm sure you got a lot of comments telling that, wow, she looks good, she looks young, what's it?
That's something I have this saying, this makeup artist told me, and I live by it. And she told me this, she's from Australia, so I have to do the accent. This is so profound. She says to me, God gives you the face you're born with, and life will give you the face you deserve. When she told me this, I'm like, whoa. She was doing my makeup, and I made her drop the brush, and I'm like, I gotta write that down. It's God gives you the face you're born with, but life will give you the face you deserve. So what does that mean? Like, it means that sometimes, like, maybe you've gone to school with someone like back in the day, and they were like the cutest girl around, but she was a bitch. You see her now, she's like, whoa. But it works reverse too. It works where maybe somebody back in the day in school, they were kind of homely and you didn't, but you see them now and you're radiant and you're. Well, what I have learned through all of this is, and thank you for that compliment, but I think people ask me, like, what's your secret? What do you do? Like, why do you stay so young? Like, what are you doing? And for as crazy as it sounds, I smile a lot.
That's good. That's just, yeah, they talk about how then it makes a massive difference with our mental health, just smiling. And it's hard for most people. We frown a lot, so yeah, it makes a
This
lot.
is my resting bitch face. And it's funny, but what I have learned is, we all have heavy stuff. We all do. But we also have a choice. And I'm not sitting here saying that I don't get depressed. Lord knows I've been through and more to come. But I think that our thoughts, I try to concentrate more on the good energy. And early days with my sisters, like I was the clown, like I was the jokester. I was like, my sisters, they would. I was that one, and I still always make jokes. I feel like that's, you can have a choice to have a heavy or lighter life, and it makes things light. It's not that you're not serious about it, but I think if I were to say any kind of advice, is what's inside is what matters, and that is what comes out more and more through the years. It's in reverse too, so it's a reverse.
No, you're definitely all right. I mean, the pure thoughts and the heart doesn't lie. And if we struggle sometimes to celebrate somebody else's success because we assume, well, why didn't it happen to me? And there's a sense of, if you can celebrate somebody else's success, it doesn't mean that what they have, they shouldn't have. I always remember, and I'll digress slightly with when, in the book of John, and Jesus and Peter walking, and John's behind. He says, "Hey, what about him?" And he says, "Hey, forget about him. Focus on what I have for yourself." And I think a lot of us tend to always say, "Why are they doing that? And how come they've got that? And what about me?" And when you even get when you get your stuff, you don't appreciate it because you think, well, it's not as much as this person. How come this person did this little thing and they've got all that? And that's really a hard thing that really holds the majority of us down, if we can't appreciate the little we have and celebrate that.
That is so true, and it's funny, and we're living in a day and age now where I tell you, God bless social media, but there's a lot. You got to know to have that balance because, A, half the stuff you're looking at on Instagram and all these, is not real. Who's going to show you the real truth? There should be a site. Right. It just says, this is, I was going to use an expletive, but yeah, this is what it's really like. But I think that my grandmother, she used to always say, and our grandmother in our early days would always travel with us on the road. She was an opera singer. She had the most class and dignity that I've ever seen in a woman. And she was a Capricorn too.
The
We were
signs.
best friends, my grandmother. But she used to say, Kathy, the racehorses, always had blinders on them for a reason. When you ever see a racehorse, they have the blinders on them. And she would tell me this, keep your blinders on, stay your course. Because when you look to the left, if a horse looks to the left while he's running, that's why those blinders are there. They look to the right or to the left, they get distracted and they don't win. So she always said, put your blinders on and just go. And what it's really taught me in life, especially in the day and age that we live in with Instagram. I mean, I think there was a pastor that said in one of his sermons, he just post and move, like post and don't scroll. Post if you have to. This is a business you're in. Post and move. Like, because you can find yourself scrolling and looking and, oh my gosh, I wish I had those shoes. And they live in that house. Oh my gosh. And you can find yourself questioning, what am I doing right? What am I doing? No, just A, it's not everything is what it appears to be ever. And you just get so much more done when you just concentrate on where you're supposed to go. That's.
I just remembered because you keep talking about your signs, and you just ha celebrated your birthday
I
within the
did.
week. So happy belated
Thank you
birthday.
so much. Well, I never, I always tiptoe to birthdays. Not the age thing, but we all, yeah. I always say, if you want to know my age, I'm somewhere in between Holly and Chardonnay. I'm right in there. But what I have learned is we have lost so many people. And maybe it's because we're all coming out of this pandemic, and through the pandemic, we lost so many. And then right at the beginning of this year, but so in seeing that, I was sharing a conversation with a friend of mine, because I've never been big on birthdays. I mean, not even with the because of the public eye thing, but I just never have been. I have friends that celebrate their birthday for a month, have their gifts. I'm like, yeah, it's a birthday, it's okay. But because we lost so many amazing people, every time you turned around, it seems this year I did post. I'm very grateful and blessed, to have another birthday. And I embrace that more and more instead of tiptoe through them or not make a big deal. They're a huge deal. We just lost Priscilla Presley. We just lost, Jeff Beck, who, my gosh, an amazing, it's like Jeff Beck is the most. One of the most amazing guitarists ever. And when you see these things, maybe it's because of social media, we see it sooner than we hear it. And it's made me really have a different whole outlook on how we celebrate life.
I mean, when he, and I think on the big one was when Twitch passed away, and people said saw videos of him a day before dancing, and as a male therapist, I know how it's easy for men to just to give this facade, but we struggle to sh talk and share and feel comfortable just going through what we're going through. And even if you ask him, you could say, he'll say, "Yeah, I'm fine, everything's good," because you don't really because we've never been we don't get taught emotions as boys, growing up. Don't cry, come on, you're a man, toughen up. And so you keep that within, and especially within our black communities, we're far worse. It's like we'll take it to God and pray, and we have to bear the cross and be strong because of society and stuff. So it is something that I've been working in my capacity to try, and this is my platform to try and use this to educate our community to say, hey, it's okay to not to be okay.
You see me leaning in on this because that has always been a huge, and I know this is not that show, this is
No,
supposed to be,
this is
but
fine.
when you said you're a therapist and what you just mentioned lays heavy on my heart when it comes to men, who are black men, to men in general. I feel like they have been raised not to cry. And earlier I said my daughter asked me, like, why don't I ever see you cry? And I said, because it doesn't get me anywhere, but it doesn't mean I don't cry. It's to me that is such that is a huge frustration. It must be to think that you're not supposed to. or to hold that in. And as we said earlier, then obviously they're, we become internalized with pain.
Yeah.
And how do you release that? I mean, I know this is not that show.
No, this is fine. This is what
It always
everyone.
perplexing to me when, you hear this a lot with men, that they're not supposed to cry. How do you release? How
Yeah.
should?
Yeah, and it really starts, and what I try and do is to get parents to try and understand it, that if you have your young child, it starts with them just learning emotions. I feel sad, I feel worried or scared, and let them start to help them to learn to name it. But also it is a generational thing. So my parents are Nigerian. They moved to the UK in the 60s. There was a war in Nigeria, so they had to escape, leave their family behind. They had to come into a new country. In Liverpool, it was cold and damp. There's racism and stuff when they had to adapt to that. So for them, they had to bear those scars. And so the threshold for mental health or for feeling, anxiety or stress was much higher because of what they have had to experience. And so subsequently, if you think I went to college in the US and in Alabama, and of course I heard about this segregation. And so if I grew up in Alabama, it would have been the same thing. My parents would have experienced a lot of those discriminations. So they would think we have to be tough and work twice as hard to make it. So what would the natural person who's maybe white may see as a challenge and be able to be emotional about that within our communities, like, nope, we can't show weakness. We need to be strong. And I think it doesn't help when we're still dealing with a lot of discrimination and racism that we have to almost carry that badge. But it's those conversations that we need to be able to have to say it can be tough. And if it is tough, we need to talk about it, and we shouldn't make it surface stuff. It shouldn't all be about football and sports and things like that. We should be able to talk about how did that make you feel? If I face disappointment, I know, I can call my brother out in Portland and say, hey, I went, this happened, and I really, really upset me. Because if I don't tell you about it, it will fester inside, and I'll just, yeah. So I need to get it out. And the more I share it, all of a sudden it loses, day by day loses that grip on me, and I'm able to get free. So it
That
is.
itself is such sound advice to, because if it's hard to cry, or if you get someone scared to cry, or not
Yeah.
talking about it helps, what you just said, call someone. Because that really has, I mean, we hear it all the time that men aren't supposed to cry, big boys don't cry, and all of that. But wait, we have hearts and souls, and everything. They have hearts like as everyone else, and it's interesting. I know we're going on and on.
Yeah, no.
What I did study, people always thought I studied through university that I studied music or the arts, but I actually studied recreation for people with special needs. That was and through that I had to take a lot of communication classes. And I think as a mother, one thing I did do, and as a wife growing up, I always made sure we communicated, like when they were little. And what you just said was so important. I always say, there's such an art to of how we communicate how we feel. Like for
Yeah.
instance, someone hurt you, and I would teach my kids this early. If someone hurt them, instead of saying, "You hurt me," like immediately, the receiver is going to get defensive. They're going to go,
Yeah.
I hurt you, they're gonna, but instead I've taught my kids to say, I'm hurt. And
Yeah.
no one's gonna say, you're not hurt, because it's you. Always
Yeah.
come from you.
Yeah.
And I've learned that to me, that's one key, communicating that I think that, especially when you were bringing up the topic of men and not being able to express themselves, or not as much as women do, because we love to
Yeah.
cry. We can tell you everything.
I
You
think,
know.
I mean, one of the things I do say to when I used to do therapy with women, it was about if you had a husband or son and they offend you, instead of saying you always do this, you always do this, if you turned it around and say when you do this, it makes me feel like this. As
Right.
men, we can process the fact that our actions have this effect on you, as opposed to I'm deliberately doing this because we'll become defensive. No, I'm not. I didn't. That's not my intention. I had no intention to do that. But when you say, when you did this, it made me feel like this, it's like, well, that's your actions. This is how I'm receiving it. Then I know
Yeah.
I'm responsible for my actions, as opposed to you accusing me of doing this deliberately. Because in general, most people don't do things deliberately, but we don't recognize how our actions affect another person. So as you said, when you own it, like your actions affect me in this way, then
Yeah.
I have the choice now to say I need to change my actions because it's just how you're receiving it. So it's on me now to make that change. So it is this is the communication, it is that. And then I think, as I said, it's good that you're speaking about it because this is part of why I did this one thing to celebrate music, but to talk to showcase that even those who have been in the public eye have experienced certain things, and it doesn't matter where we are, we can still improve and learn with this.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, it's so true. Like, I love the platform that you have because we don't get a chance sometimes to express what we're going through. You know, artists, can't speak for all the artists. I'd speak for me. I don't get a chance to, but lately I have been embracing it more, like I said earlier. And yeah, artists, it's an interesting thing. You know, we choose this, all of us. You choose the platform you're on. I choose where I am. And then this comes with it, comes along with it. Honestly, my best friend since 7th grade says
Wow.
I'm in the wrong business, that I need to work for the Red Cross. I'm not kidding you. And I think you know, I'm an artist, but I think earlier in the interview I mentioned I've always had a balance, at least felt that I've had a balance. Because early on, I really felt like I had a Hannah Montana life, where I would go and be this superstar in some countries. I mean, people waiting at the airport in Japan, fans,
Wow.
and then get on that plane and get on that bus and go to school, you know, and just sit in the classroom, and that's where I am. That's who I am. And that other part is who I am too, but it's my work. And it
Yeah.
helped me to get. To create a really stronger and strong balance. But I do see a lot of artists, and I remember reading something Julia Roberts, the actress, said once. She's like, if you believe all the great things that you read about yourself, then believe all the bad things. Know what? Just don't read it at all. Like some things, you know, I've never had, I think I've always been able to balance it in a way that is healthy for me. But I can't imagine being an artist like a Michael Jackson or a, you know, I remember reading an article or seeing a documentary with the Beatles, and they knew when they got to the place where they looked at each other and said, you know, we're prisoners of our own music. Like the girls were screaming so loud that at one concert, you know, they were singing, I love you, yeah. And then they looked at each other and the girls were screaming so loud that they just started mouthing it. And they were
Wow.
just messing around because, and then after the show, they just said, they're not even hearing us anymore. You know, they get to different countries and cities and they get ushered up to the penthouse, not allowed out, stay in your room, you know, while you. And of course, with Michael, I remember Michael's memorial. I didn't go, I mean, I wasn't there physically, but I was watching it, as we all, most of us were. And that's the first time I ever saw Stevie Wonder. He wept.
Wow.
And I said, you know, that's because I believe Michael had a huge heart, one of the nicest people you would have ever met. So I think that's because Stevie only saw his heart. And but his brother got up to speak, and he told a little story about how Marlon, he said, once he was in a old vintage record shop, and saw this really old man over there digging through some records, really old homeless guy looking through some records. And he walked over to the homeless guy and he whispered in the homeless guy's ear, "Hey, Mike." And Michael looked at him and said, "How'd you know it was me?" And he said, "I recognize those shoes anywhere." We were all cracked up. But then he went on to say, but that's what it was like to be Michael, that he would have to actually have physical, professional makeup artists come in to totally change his visage in order to just walk down the street and have some bit of normalcy. When you think about that, you know, can you think about the price that you pay? And I'm sitting here saying I couldn't go to soccer practice or I couldn't go, you know, track meets, but there are people like that when you reach that magnitude. And there's a huge price that
But
you
in your
pay.
early days, was it like that then for you guys during We Are Family and I'm thinking of you during the one of those songs where this peak, was it like that for you?
You know, yes, of course, more, but I'll be very honest with you. Depending on where and what territory the concerts I do now, you still get a huge amount of people that come up to you and tell you how much they love your music and blah, blah, blah. And I never take it for granted. You know, I'm like, again, like, you know, you can see I like to talk.
That's
I used to drive my sisters crazy because I was the one that liked to start conversations, recipes and stuff. Like, we gotta go, come on. But what I have realized is that, you know, I've always looked at it as a compliment. You know, you worry when someone doesn't ask for your autograph nowadays for your selfie. But there's a crazy thing with the selfies nowadays too, because now it's very interesting. We're living in such a world of me, 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 narcissism, me, and we are. Like, you know, I do. Sometimes someone will ask to take a picture with their phone with me, but they don't want a picture of me. They want a picture of them with me. And you know, they'll take a picture and they'll look at it and then they'll go, "Oh, can we take another one?" And I'm like, "Can I see how I look in it? You obviously don't like how you look." But anyway, I can laugh at this. But you know, I do say that, you know, we choose this, don't we? When we're artists, it comes along with it. So yeah, I never can understand artists that go, you know, "No autographs, please," or "No." I'm like, "Yeah, you chose this, and that's the biggest compliment." And sure, in some cases, you know, you might have a flight that you have to take, or and you have to say, "Oh, I gotta go," you know. But I always take the time because I think I really do sincerely think it's the biggest compliment when someone wants to give you accolades for your work that you do, or buy your music, or appreciate your music. And I remember, I think it was Carly Simon. I remember reading something she said once. She's like, "Isn't that like why we kind of worked in clubs until 2 in the morning? Somebody could hear our music, and now
Yeah.
it's become this big thing, and we have a problem with it." So I
Yeah.
think a lot of artists need to check that, you know, of why it comes
Yeah.
up.
Yeah, but because you did talk about how it was for Michael and stuff and but then could I look back and see, well, you guys, four young women, especially having this big song and all looking attractive, how
Four young women
much,
in spandex.
yes, as Dex as well. I mean, it must have been, and especially within the industry, who's protecting you guys and who was keeping you guys safe
That's a whole other show. And it's in my memoirs. Our mother was something else. Like, she actually was a gorgeous woman. She was a splitting image to Dorothy Dandridge, my mom. She was a shrewd businesswoman in a good way. I mean, here you got five daughters and five, because we have a fifth daughter, my fifth sister,
Sister.
my closest sister. She's a retired educator in Carroll. And Dick Clark used to call Carroll the closet sister, because whenever Debbie was on maternity leave, Carol would step in. Debbie was on maternity leave like six times, so Carol was always there. And if you Google us, if you look at YouTube, you'll always see, ah, there's Carol. You see lots of performances with the three of us or with Carol. And but lost my train of thought there. What was
Yeah,
it?
no, just protecting four young women within
Protecting.
this man's world.
But we, I think our biggest protection, honestly, not to sound cliche, is God was always before us and behind us, and we were very blessed in that case. And our grandmother,
Okay.
our grandmother was, who's gonna mess with like, who's gonna mess with your grandmom sitting
Yeah,
there?
yeah, yeah,
But,
yeah.
and I know we did like we had such a huge genre of diverse audience that we would actually maybe for 2 months open for Rick James for the whole James tour. And you want to know something? Not he was always the utmost gentleman. Like he
Wow.
loved my grandma.
Ah, grandma was this. Let's go. Oh, Zoom, what the hell are you doing? Hey guys, thanks for watching. Thanks for being part of the Halftime Chat community. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe. But most importantly, why don't you consider being a member? That's a way of supporting the channel, but also getting a lot of videos ahead of time, a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and some exclusive content that doesn't get shared. But anyway, thanks for watching and thanks for being part of Halftime Chat. Please.